is your name?
Norris.
What year were you born?
1940.
Where were you born?
Caribbean island of Grenada.
What did your parents do for a living?
Farm workers.
What inspired you to get into tailoring?
As a youth on the island, there's not much you could do because the island only got 100,000 people, and if you don't get into government work, you got to learn a trade. And I took tailoring up at the age of 16. And I came to England when I was 20 years old. And I worked in a factory for a little while, but I didn't like it at all. So then I come back into tailoring, And that's where I remain. I worked for this company since 1990. So it's a long time now, But I worked for several other firms. I did work for Huntsman's in the 60s, And then I worked on Maddox Street with it. Wells of Mayfair. I worked there for quite a long time as well.
Can you tell us about any challenging obstacles that you had to face?
Well, you always, when I came here in the 60s, it was never like how it is now, You had to struggle, And when I came into tailoring in England, I was a better apprentice than the apprentices I work with, because I really knew how to sew from back home. And when I came into the trade, it was very easy for me. Because when I left the island, I could have really make a trousers. I could have make a trousers, and I used to put sleeves and coat together and things like that, So I was quite competent, And I never lost the zeal for tailoring. Never, just like it, Especially when you got to take a garment from the start, cut it, trim it, and make it, and you sit on a customer, it's really, really mind-blowing,
Can you tell us about any significant people that are involved in your training?
Well, in my training, I had a 9 months training as well in Prairieville Training Center. And the man there was Mr. Plummer. Very, very nice man. And he used to teach in the London College of Fashion. And that opened in 1963 by the late the Queen Mother. And it was very nice. But the whole thing changed now,
Tell us about your first job in tailoring.
My first job in tailoring, well, my real first job in tailoring was with James and James. I don't think they exist now. They used to be on Several Row. Not Several Row, not Old Burlington Street. But I think they closed down now. And I work with quite a few firms. I work with Huntsman for about 8 or 9 years. And I left there because it was section work. And you don't progress when you're doing section work. You do the same thing over and over again, So then I went to Maddox Street, where as a coat maker, and I worked there for about 12 years. And I came here as a coat maker, but I seldom make coats now. I do alteration and, well, I might do the odd thing like what you see there for the prince.
Yeah.
Yeah, and these sort of things like that. And I have about 4 or 5 jobs in the line for the Brunei people.
Okay.
So that's nice. And I get more pleasure working on the military stuff for Brunei and these sort of people and them. Yeah.
Do you want to sit down? You can sit down. That's fine.
Yeah.
Hang on, I'm just going to take this down a bit. Take a new focus.
Can you describe the atmosphere when you first started in Savile Row?
Well, when you first started in Savile Row, it's a total different story. When I was at Huntsman, there was what, 8 or 10 apprentices. Now you seldom see apprentices now. Yeah, the atmosphere was good because from work I end up in the college. London College of Fashion, we used to go there every evening. And yeah, and it was fun. Yeah.
In what way was it fun?
Well, you meet a lot of blokes. You meet in the trade, you discuss things, and I remember a chap came there to make a waistcoat. And funny enough, I was the only person who knew how to make a waistcoat there in the whole class. Yeah. Because I did everything. I make any garment. Yeah.
How did your career progress after you finished training?
Well, when you're not satisfied with the place you work in, you just move on. Yeah, and, you know, you got a few problems on the way. Like, I went for a job once, and the chap asked me if I could use a needle on a thimble, and I didn't answer him. I just walked straight out. Yeah. I thought that was insulting, actually. Yeah.
Was it quite easy to go from job to job back then? Then?
Yeah, in those days you could move on easily. Well, half the place is closed down now anyhow, or the amalgamate. Like this firm is about 4 firms together. Yeah. Jones, Stock and Johnson, Dawson, Myers and Mortimer, Ward and Kruger, and there was a Scottish branch. Well, they closed that now. Yeah.
Can you explain the techniques that you use?
Well, in tailoring, the first thing you got to understand is sometimes different material, you got to use different technique to make it up. Because if you doing a material with tailoring, wool and tailoring, you can't have a hot iron. The iron got to be mild, you know. But with the inclusion of these machines now, no problem. But in the old days, we used to use irons, heavy irons. I mean, if you turn around, you'll see one on the shelf. There, right? See it? And it's 12 pounds in weight. Yeah, so. But you get a nice job done with it. And before that, we work in one workshop where they use coal iron. You know, you put it on the coal, and then you put it in a bucket of water to cool it down and press with it, yeah.
Tell us about the important tools of your trade. So what's the most important?
Pardon?
What's the most important tools that you use now?
The most important tools is your shears. Yeah. Your shears, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Have you had the shears a long time?
some of them up, because I got a workshop at home as well, you know, so I got some of the older tools there.
Mm-hmm. 1963, you see that? Could you hold it up in front? Tell us about this.
Well, that was given to me by Mr. Plummer in the Perryville Training Center. He gave me this, a shares, and I got some other things, but I haven't got it yet. They had a woodworking session in the training center, and they made this for me. And this.
What's this?
It is a press sleeve board. We mostly call it sleeve board, but it's a pressing board. Yeah. And this is for pressing the edges open on the jacket. Because especially if you're doing a double breasted, you got to get it in there, you know? Like pressing the edges here like this.
Press it.
Yeah, you press it open. Got to press it flat.
How has the cut and style changed over time?
How?
Has the cut and style changed over time with the suit?
Well, the cutting changed a lot, because when I get into the trade, most of the coat was one piece. You see that, the front and the back. But now that it's made into a side body. If I could explain that for you. This is one piece, and this is another piece, and then the back. Yeah. After the interview, I could show you on this overcoat. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about the relationship between the different tailors and the houses over time?
Well, tailors always argue.
Yeah.
Well, funny enough, I've never seen a fight. You know, but there, always argument, yeah. Yeah, but no fights.
How's the relationship between your colleagues upstairs and downstairs?
Quite all right. Yeah. They are the cutters upstairs, and they supply the job to the tailors, and the tailors tailor the jobs. Yeah.
What do tailors fight about? What's the argument?
Well, petty things, you know, really, really. Petty things, yeah.
Like what, fabrics, shears?
Yeah, well, some that you're missing stuff, you know?
Oh, okay.
And you accuse somebody of taking it or using it. So because nobody liked anybody using shears. That's the main thing. Your shears is yours, you know. Because every time you get it sharpened, you got to pay about £8.
Yeah.
So, and you don't want nobody to drop your shares. The worst thing is to drop your shares. Well, when you drop it, it's finished. You got to reset it. Yeah. And it's a sin if you drop your shares, a cutter die or a tailor die or something like that. Yeah.
Could you talk about historically what working conditions were like when you first came in, what it was like for you, what was it like, the conditions you worked in?
Well, the condition never really bad. Any tailor shop you work in is warm place. It's very warm because of the irons and the heat and things like that. But I never had any argument on work. I could tell you a simple thing, and it upset me. The apprentices, they used to play tricks on each other, like sticking a needle in your ruler, and when you go to sit down, you sit on the needle. And I'm not telling you what, They never done that to me because I give them a warning, you know. I don't make joke with these sort of things. I told them straight up, and it was never done to me. But I've seen blokes forget they had to sit down, and when they sit down, the chap just run and put his roller with the needle on it, you know, and then he went up to the sky. Yeah, you know.
What was your most memorable job with a customer?
I tell you what. Recently, I make a suit for Steve Lawrence's brother. I don't know if you know Steve Lawrence. For his brother.
No, I don't.
His boy, he was killed in
Black
Boy. He was killed by white boys. Yes,
Stephen Lawrence.
His brother.
Oh, wow.
And he, such a nice chap, you know, very, very quiet. He was getting married in Mauritius. Okay. And I was introduced to him and I made the suit for him. Yeah. You know? Mm-hmm.
How was that? Was it?
Out of this world.
What did that mean to you to make the suit?
Well, I consider him a celebrity, you know. Steve Lawrence's brother, you know. Yeah. I make a suit for him. But you mostly work through the farm, you know. We make a lot of things for celebrity, but if you're a tailor, you don't see them.
Yeah.
It's all to do with the cutters upstairs.
How do you feel about the division of labor within the trade?
The division of labor is hard, you know. Tailors tailor, cutters cut, you know, and things like that. Yeah. But as I said, when I went to the college, I learned to do everything.
Yeah.
So I could be independent as well. Cut, make and trim a suit, anything, you know, rock. Most memorable garment I make, well, you could see for the Brunei people, when they make the garments, is out of this world. Because I think everybody is in military, you know. Even, well, you know, you see the kids' stuff as well, they're all military, you know.
Sharing with
them. Yeah. Because one is getting married soon, and I think most of the garments will be made here.
Yeah.
There are some of them upstairs already being made. Yeah. You can ask Paul to let you have a look at them. Yeah.
What are the advantages and disadvantages of your craft, of what you do?
Well, The advantages, my advantages, that I always make something for friends and family.
Yeah.
Yeah, if somebody's getting married or things like that, I make some garments for them. Yeah. I remember making an overcoat for a friend of mine. And as we get older, we don't go to wedding and christening anymore. We more go to funerals. And sometime in a funeral, I could see five of my overcoats in the winter. Yeah. Five or six or even more. Yeah.
What are the disadvantages?
My disadvantage in tailoring is sewing for friends.
Friend.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Why? What happens?
Well, it never works out, you know.
Yeah.
They don't want to pay. Yeah. If a friend bring a garment, he just say, "Can you do that for me?" And the whole fact of it. They don't understand the tailoring trade.
Yeah.
Because the tailoring trade, this part of the tailoring trade is very expensive. And it's not like going to the local shop and buying a jacket for £150.
Yeah.
Because some of the material is more than £150 a meter. So, you see, that's it. That's the problem we have, you know.
Tell us how you think Zamora has developed in terms of technology.
Well, the truth of bespoke tailoring is the same. He don't change a lot, you know. To be honest, he don't change a lot at all. Well, what happened now? The older tailors were much, much better.
Yeah,
but the tailors today, they want to do everything quick. You know, and the job don't come up to scratch. Yeah. So that's the problem.
Looking back, is there anything that you would have done differently in your career?
Yes. One thing I would have done better, instead of doing section work, I worked 7 years, 7-8 years doing section work at Huntsman. And I would have been more advanced if I was making the whole garment.
Yeah.
You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're working in the sleeve section, you do sleeves. If you're working in the forward section, you do forward to bring it up to sleeves and collar and things like that. And you could be doing that for two, 3 years or more, you know.
So you would have wished that you didn't only do sleeves, you did
the whole garment,
the whole
No, I never had problem with trousers.
Okay.
Because I was making trousers from back home. Well, in Grenada, so I never had problem with trousers. So when I came here, I was a perfect trouser maker. Yeah, I must say that, yeah. So it's all right.
How does training differ now to how it used to be?
There's no apprentices now.
Yeah.
You know, you don't see that now. I taught some girls from the girls and boys from the college. They used to come one day a week. And most of them disappeared. There's only one girl I definitely know. She's at Huntsman now. Where she is? Issa, no. She worked with Issa. Issa is the trouser maker in there. She came for training from Newham College, I think. Is it Newham College? She came from Newham College, and when she finished, I let Issa take on making trousers. God, I was it. And she's on her own making trousers in Severo now. Yeah, she's a trouser. Well, she did a proper 5 years apprenticeship.
Yeah,
with Issa. Issa in there, the trouser maker.
Okay.
Her name is Joyce from Newham College. And she's working on our own now, you know, making trousers.
What qualities does a person need to work in this business?
Well, I think you got to think quick.
Mm-hmm.
Think quick. But you see, when I was learning trade, we didn't have all this equipment because, you see, most of the girls now, they photograph everything. You see what I mean? And keep it in memory, but during our time, you got to have it in your head. Keep it in your head. Yeah. And that's how it was.
Yeah. Tell us, take us through your typical day, your typical working day.
Well, I can't say my typical working day now because I hardly make any garments now, but you typical working day, you get a coat from upstairs with all the trimmings. You will soak the canvas in water to shrink it, the canvas and the lap tear. And then you fix the coat. When you say fix it, you cut all the linings, the canvas, and everything. And then you mark stitch it. You get the pockets ready. You give it to somebody like the lady in there, and she put the pockets for you. And then when you come back, you start from there, and you continue, and you make the garment. Yeah.
What was it like being a black person coming into this industry?
Well, when I came into the industry, you know, I'm talking about 1960, there was many.
No.
There was many. When I worked at Huntsman, there was only one other black tailor there. He went back home. That's Africa. He went back to, I think he's from Sierra Leone. He went back home. And then I hardly met many black people in tailoring, funny enough, you know. It's just recently I was so shocked when one girl doing finishing, you know. Finishing is felling and putting buttonholes and things like that. And one girl come doing the work, and she was a black girl. I was surprised. As the first black woman I saw in the trade, you know. And it's only recently, But no, you've seen quite a few now.
So what was that like for you then, when you first came into the trade, when you were one of the few black people? How was that for you?
Now, I didn't have any problem when I came in the trade, because when I worked at Huntsman, there was quite a few apprentices, and I was better than every one of them. And I had to teach them things, you see? I was better than all of them, yeah. And I had to teach them to work. Yeah. And then, well, I did have a teaching spell with Hammersmith and Fulham College. I teach there for 4 years, yeah, tailoring, yeah. That was fun as well, you know. That's when I met the most black people in the trade. Yeah, they well, it was only 2 hours every evening. It's like a fun evening out for a lot of people, you know.
Yeah.
There was you should have an idea of what the evening classes are like. There was cooking, baking, you know, tailoring, computer, you know, and things like that. It was fun.
Can we take you back to when you were at Huntsman, say when you first started at Huntsman?
Yeah.
Can you tell us what the atmosphere was like between the workers and also between you and, say, the cutters? Because we've heard about Hammock and Hall. We've heard stories of them. Could you tell us?
Yeah, I know Mr. Hammock and Mr. Hall. I work with both of them. Actually, Mr. Hall, who employed me, when I came for the interview, he employed me. He gave me the interview and employed me. Yeah. But the thing at Huntsman, during those days, it was so different. You wasn't allowed to have a radio on the work. No music, no radio. And I used to like cricket. Well, I still like cricket, you know what? I used to bring my little radio on work. I was told off for bringing my radio on work. They didn't want any radio on work. Yeah. So, during those days, Huntsman was a very, very strict firm. But changes now, yeah. Yeah.
Other people have talked a bit about relation, working conditions, and how pay was set. Can you say a little bit about how that, your experience of that?
Well, when I went at Huntsman, I was paid as a junior, because it wasn't It wasn't peace work or anything like that. It was wages. You get wages every week. And I left Huntsman for one reason. The only reason I left Huntsman, when the chap who was in charge of the slave section, when he retired, they didn't make me the boss in the slave section. And I was better. I'm not trying to boast, but I was better than the other three fellas in the slave section. And they didn't make me the boss, and I just left. Yeah.
Why not? Why do you think they didn't make you the boss?
Well, I don't. I think it was a racist thing, to be honest. Because the chap they put in charge of the slave section, he couldn't record a check slip. And I had to record the check slips for him. Yeah. Making a check slip, making a garment with check slip, the cutter always make the sleeve a half an inch too big, you know, so that you got to cut it down. And when he didn't know how to cut down the sleeve, and I had to cut it down for him, I'm showing him what to do, and he's my boss. So I just left. But when you working on your own, it's your own responsibility. If the sleeve is not right, you recut it, you know, and things like that. If it's too small, you got to add on it because they always leave inlays. Yeah.
Where do you see the future of Savile Row?
For the past 20, 25 years, you're hearing that's the end of tailoring in Savile Row. For the past 25, 30 years. As long as there's people with money, Savile Row will always exist. Because you get a good cutter and a good tailor put a garment together, there's nothing nice like that. You put it together properly, and it's all right. Like my two jackets there. The 20 plastic bags is mine. Yeah.
So what would you say that Savile Row is an area? What does it mean to you? You've got a long history here. How would you encapsulate that?
Well, Savile Row is all about quality. Definitely.
And for you, what is it for you?
Quality. When I see people on the train or on the buses or walking the street or anything like that, that's the first thing I look at them like that. At the garment, you know. And I could tell you how good it is, you know. Just looking at it, I could tell you how good it is. Yeah.
And how about your own sort of personal history on Savile Row? What does it mean for you to have worked here for?
Well, I always consider myself a Savile Row tailor. That's how it is, a Savile Row tailor. Yeah. And I know that mostly where I go now is birthday party, or I don't go to any dances and thing anymore. Because I'm just too scared, you know. And if I go to any function, I got to know the people. I go like Friday, I'll be in an 84 birthday party. Friday and Saturday in an 80 birthday party. And these things, I'm very, very scared of the youngsters today. So I don't go in any function at all now.
Yes, probably. And looking back over your career, what would you say is what you've got the most out of in your, what's the thing you've taken most pleasure in? What aspect of your work or business or?
Well, it's a bit late now, you know. I'm finished already, you know. I just do certain hours, yeah.
But looking back, how do you feel about the work you've done on Savile Row?
I'm very pleased. I'm pleased with the work I've done. The garments you make, you hardly see people wearing them because they might either be celebrities, MPs. We do a lot of work for America and this sort of thing, you don't see them. But when I look at a movie, I always look at the garment, ladies and men, you know? And I could tell you how good they are, yeah, and how fitting, because if the garment don't fit you, no matter how it is, you look bad.
Right. Yeah.